Chapter 22. In the beginning of September 1834, the Bishop Sinay gave me the enviable position of one of the vicars of St. Roch, Quebec, where the Reverend Mr. Tetu had been curate for about a year. He was one of the 17 children of Mr. Francis Tetu, one of the most respectable and wealthy farmers of St. Thomas. So amiable was my new curate that I never saw him in bad humor a single time during the 4 years I was there, although I sometimes unintentionally sorely tried his patience. I never heard an unkind word proceed from his lips. In one of the pleasant hours which we used to pass after dinner, one of the vicars, Mr. Louis Parent, said to the Reverend Mr. Tetu, "I have handed this morning more than $100 to the bishop as the price of the masses which my pious penitents have requested me to celebrate, the greatest part of them for souls in purgatory." Every week I have to do the same thing, just as you and every one of the hundreds of priests in Canada have to do. Now I would like to know how the bishops can dispose of all these masses, and what they do with the large sums of money which go into their hands from every part of the country. The good curate answered in a joking manner as usual, "If they are all celebrated, purgatory must be emptied twice a day, for I have calculated that the sums given for those masses in Canada cannot be less than $4,000 every day. There are three times as many Catholics in the United States as here, so there is no exaggeration in saying that $16,000 at least are given every day in these two countries to throw cold water on the burning flames of that fiery prison. Now, multiplied by 365 days of the year, make the handsome sum of $5,840,000 every year. But as we all know, more than twice as much is paid for high masses than for the low. It is evident that more than $10 million are expended to help the souls of the purgatory in their tortures every 12 months in North America alone. There is not a sufficient number of priests in the world to say all the masses which are paid for by the people. I do not know any more than you do what the bishops do with those millions of dollars. But if you want to know my mind on that delicate subject, I will tell you that the least we think and speak of it, the better it is for us. I reject those thoughts as much as possible, and I advise you to do the same thing." The other vicars seemed inclined with Mr. Parent to accept that conclusion, but as I had not said a single word, they requested me to give them my views, which I did. There are many things in the Holy Church which look like dark spots, but I hope that this is due only to our ignorance. So long as we do not know what the bishops do with those numberless masses paid into their hands, I prefer to believe that they act as honest men. I hardly said these few words when I was called to visit a sick parishioner, and the conversation was ended. 8 days later, I was alone in my room, reading the L'Ami de la Religion, A. Du Roy, A paper which I received from Paris, edited by Picot. My curiosity was not a little excited when I read at the head of a page, in large letters, Admiral Piety of the French Canadian People. The reading of that page made me shed tears of shame and shook my face to its foundation. I ran to the curate and the vicars and said to them, "A few days ago we tried but in vain to find what becomes of the large sums of money paid by our people to the bishops to say masses. Here is the answer." We then read together the article, the substance of which was that the venerable bishops of Quebec had sent not less than 100,000 francs at different times to the priests of Paris that they might say 400,000 masses at 5 cents each. Here we had the sad evidence that our bishops had taken for themselves 400,000 francs from our poor people under the pretext of saving the souls from purgatory. That article fell upon us as a thunderbolt. Our tongues were paralyzed by shame. At last, Bellegion, addressing the curate, said, "Is it possible that our bishops are swindlers, and we their tools to defraud our people? What would the people say if they knew that not only we do not say the masses, for which they constantly fill our hands with their hard-earned money, but that we send those masses to be said in Paris for 5 cents. What will our good people think of us all when they know that our bishops pockets 20 cents out of each mass they ask us to celebrate according to their wishes?" The curate answered, "It is very lucky that the people do not know, for they would surely throw us all into the river. Let us keep that shameful trade as secret as possible, for what is the crime of simony if this be not an instance of it?" I replied, "How can you hope to keep that traffic of the body and blood of Christ a secret when not less than 40,000 copies of this paper are circulated in France, and more than 100 copies come to the United States and Canada? The danger is greater than you suspect. It is not because of such public and undeniable crimes and vile tricks of the clergy of France that the French people in general, half a century ago, condemned all the bishops and priests of France to death. But that sharp operation of our bishops takes a still darker color when we consider that those 5 cent masses which are said in Paris are not worth a cent. For who among us is ignorant of the fact that the greatest part of the priests of Paris are infidels, and that many of them live publicly with concubines? Would our people put their money in our hands if we were honest enough to tell them that their masses would be said for 5 cents in Paris by such priests? Do we not deceive them when we accept their money under the well understood condition that we shall offer the holy sacrifice according to their wishes? But if you allow me to speak a little more, I have another strange fact to consider with you." "Yes, speak, speak," answered all four priests. I then resumed, "Do you remember how you were enticed into the Three Masses Society? Who among us had the idea that the greatest part of the year would be spent in saying masses for the priests, and thus become impossible to satisfy the pious demands of the people who support us? We already belonged to the Societies of the Blessed Virgin Mary and of Saint Michael, which raised to 5 the number of masses we had to celebrate for the dead priest, dazzled by the idea that we would have 2,000 masses said for us at our death, we bit up the bait presented to us by the bishop. We have had to say 165 masses for the 33 priests who died during the past year, which means that each of us has to pay $41 to the bishop for masses which he has had said in Paris for $8. Being forced the greatest part of the year to celebrate the holy sacrifice for the benefit of the dead priest, we cannot celebrate the masses for which we are daily paid by the people, and are therefore forced to transfer them into the hands of the bishops, who sends them to Paris after spiriting away 20 cents each. Then, the more priests he enrolls in his society of 3 masses, the more 20 cents he pockets from us and from our pious people. That explains his admirable zeal to enroll every one of us. It is not the value of the money, but I feel desolate when I see that we become the accomplices of this simoniacal trade. However, why should we lament over the past? There is no remedy for it. Let us learn from the past how to be wise in the future. Mr. Tatu answered, "You have shown us our error now. Can you indicate any remedy?" "That remedy is to abolish the society of 3 masses said to establish another one of 1 mass, which will be said at the death of every priest. In that way, it is true that instead of 2,000 masses, we shall have only 1,200 at our death. But if 1,200 masses do not open to us the gates of heaven, it is because we shall be in hell. We shall be enabled to say more masses at the request of our people, and shall diminish the number of 5-cent masses said by the priest of Paris at the request of our bishop. If you take my advice, we will immediately name the Reverend Mr. Tatu, president of the new society. Mr. Parent will be its treasurer, and I consent to act as your secretary. When our society is organized, we will send our resignations to the president of the other society. We shall immediately address a circular to all the priests to give them the reason for the change and respectfully ask them to unite with us in this new society. In order to diminish the number of masses which are celebrated by the 5-cent priests of Paris. Within 2 hours, the new society was fully organized, the reasons for its formation written in a book, and our names were sent to the bishop with a respectful letter informing him that we were no more members of the 3 masses society. That letter was signed C. Chinnicky, secretary. 3 hours later, I received the following note from the bishop's palace. "My Lord Bishop of Quebec wants to see you immediately upon important affairs. Do not fail to come without delay. Truly yours, Charles F. Cazot, secretary." I showed the missive to the curate and the vicars and told them, "A big storm is raging in the mountain. This is the first peal of thunder. The atmosphere looks dark and heavy. Pray for me, that I may speak and act as an honest and fearless priest." In the first parlor of the bishop, I met my personal friend, Secretary Cazot. He said to me, "My dear Chinnicky, you are sailing on a rough sea. You must be a lucky mariner if you escape the wreck. The bishop is very angry at you. But be not discouraged, for the right is on your side. He then kindly opened the door of the bishop's parlor and said, "My lord, Mr. Chiniki is here waiting for your orders." "Let him come in," answered the bishop. I entered and threw myself at his feet, but stepping backward, he told me in a most excited manner, "I have no benediction for you till you give me a satisfactory explanation of your strange conduct." I arose to my feet and said, "My lord, what do you want from me?" "I want you, sir, to explain to me the meaning of this letter, signed by you as secretary of a newborn society called One Mass Society." I answered him, "My lord, the letter is in good French. Your lordship must have understood it well. I cannot see how any explanation on my part could make it clearer. I want to know your object in leaving the old and respectable Three Masses Society. Is it not composed of your bishop and of all the priests of Canada? Did you not find yourself in sufficiently good company? Do you object to the prayers said for the souls of purgatory?" I replied, "My lord, I will answer by revealing to your lordship a fact which has not sufficiently attracted your attention. The great number of masses which we say for the souls of the dead priests makes it impossible for us to say the masses which the people pay into our hands. We are forced to transfer this money into your hands, and then instead of having these holy sacrifices offered by the good priest of Canada, your lordship has recourse to the priest of France, where you get them said for 5 cents. We see two great evils in this. First, our masses are said by priests in whom we have not the least confidence, for between you and me, the masses said by the priest of France, particularly of Paris, are not worth 1 cent. The second evil is still greater. One of the greatest crimes which our Holy Church has always condemned, the crime of simony." "Do you mean to say," indignantly replied the bishop, "that I am guilty of the crime of simony?" "Yes, my lord, it is just what I mean to say. I do not see how your lordship does not understand that the trade in masses by which you gained 400,000 francs on a spiritual merchandise which you get for 100,000 is not simony. You insult me. You are the most imprudent man I ever saw. If you do not retract what you have said, I will suspend and excommunicate you." "My suspension and my excommunication will not make the proposition of your lordship much better, for the people will know that you have excommunicated me because I protested against your trade in masses. They will know that you pocket 20 cents on every mass, and that you get them said for 5 cents in Paris by priests, the greater part of whom live with concubines, and you will see that they will in one voice bless me for my protest and condemn you for your simonical trade." I uttered these words with such perfect calmness that the bishop saw that I had not the least fear of his thunders. "It is evident to me," said he, "that you aim to be a reformer, a Luther in Canada, but you will never be anything else than a monkey." I saw that my bishop was beside himself, and that my perfect calmness added to his irritation. I answered him, "If Luther had never done anything worse than I do today, he ought to be blessed by God and man. I respectfully request your lordship to be calm. The subject on which I speak to you is more serious than you think. You are digging under your own feet and under the feet of your priest the same abyss in which the Church of France nearly perished not half a century ago. I am your best friend when I fearlessly tell you this truth before it's too late. God knows it is because I love and respect you as my own father that I profoundly deplore the terrible consequences that will follow. Woe to your lordship! Woe to me! Woe to our holy church! The day that our people know that in our holy religion the blood of Christ is turned into merchandise to fill the treasury of the bishops and popes. It was evident that these last words, said with the most perfect and self-possession, had not all been lost. The bishop had become calmer. He answered me, I could punish you for this freedom with which you have dared to speak to your bishop, but I prefer to warn you to be more respectful and obedient in the future. You have requested me to take away your name from the Three Mass Society. You and the four simpletons who have committed the same act of folly are the only losers in the matter. Instead of 2,000 masses said for the deliverance of your souls from the flames of purgatory, you will have only 1,200. But be sure of it, there is too much wisdom and true piety in my clergy to follow your example. You will be left alone, and I fear covered with ridicule, for they will call you the little reformer. I answered the bishop, I am young, it is true, but the truths I have said to your lordship are as old as the gospel. I have such confidence in the infinite merits of the holy sacrifice of the Mass that I sincerely believe that 1,200 Masses said by good priests are enough to cleanse my soul and extinguish the flames of purgatory. But, besides, I prefer 1,200 Masses paid by 100 sincere Canadian priests to 1,000,000 said by the 5-cent priest of Paris. These last words, spoken half serious, half jest, brought a change on the face of my bishop. I thought it was a good moment to get my benediction and take leave of him. I took my hat, knelt at his feet, obtained the blessing, and left